Hello, fellow Rebel Capitals. Hope you're well. Wanted to go over an article Josh just sent me from Bloomberg, a Bloomberg opinion piece where my good buddy Brent Johnson gets a shout out. Unfortunately, it's kind of a derogatory shout out that basically accuses him of being a cult leader. So we're going to go into my reaction from this story and then try to go over some takeaways that will actually help you better understand the monetary system. So let's dive into this article. And here we go. The dollar bulls are looking increasingly like a cult. It's hard to boil down the 6.6 trillion foreign FX market down to a simple narrative, but that hasn't stopped people from trying. So US dollars appreciated. Yep, we know that. Okay, so it's way up on the DXY. And then the author says, naturally, betting on gains in the greenback has acquired a huge following, even among retail, gaining cult-like status, almost equal to the self-described apes that cheerlead for meme stock AMC Entertainment Holdings. Come on. I like how you're trying to associate two things that to make one seem far more extreme. If you spend any time on Twitter, you know thousands of people have subscribed to the dollar milkshake theory coined by Brent Johnson of wealth management firm Santiago Capital. The theory is that all fiat currencies are flawed, ultimately doomed obsolescence because they are rooted in debt and not backed by any absolute store of value. Right here, we kind of see where the author might not totally get Brent's view. I don't know if this gentleman has ever spoken with Brent. Maybe not. I'm getting the vibe he hasn't, but who knows? I could be wrong. But the dollar is less flawed than others. Okay, he's back on the right track. Because it's world's reserve currency, and most global transactions, especially commodity market, are conducted in dollars. When the Federal Reserve began to withdraw liquidity from the system via quantitative tightening, it became a net seller of treasuries, which serves to constrain the amount of dollars in circulation. Here's where he goes off the rails. So let me read this again. When the Federal Reserve begins to withdraw liquidity from the system. Okay. How does the Fed withdraw liquidity from the system? So this is kind of the mainstream view where the Fed directly creates liquidity in the form of bank reserves. So this implies explicitly, I guess, that, so it doesn't really imply, that this states explicitly that bank reserves in and of themselves are liquidity. So the more bank reserves we have in the system, the more liquidity we have. The fewer bank reserves we have in the system, the less liquidity we have. Okay, well, let's go to a chart of bank reserves in the system prior to the GFC, where there was 2007, roughly 40 billion with a B in bank reserves. So are we to assume that the level of quote unquote liquidity in the market was, what, 100 times less basically than it is now? Really? That seems like a stretch. Either that, or maybe bank reserves in and of themselves are not liquidity. I don't know. Now, I think there's an argument where you could say if the Fed is selling treasuries, then who's buying? Let's just say it's 100% average Joe. And so, well, first of all, it's going to be the primary dealers, but let's just say that they're offloading the treasuries to the primary, or excuse me, to the average Joe and Jane. Okay, well, then you're going to have the amount of dollars that are in the commercial banks, banking liabilities of the commercial banks and the foreign deposits. Those are going to go down. Okay, but we're assuming that those dollars that were on deposit with banks that were backed up by bank reserves are actually expanding the balance sheet capacity of the commercial banks themselves. Again, really? So let me get this straight. By adding a liability to a bank, you're increasing their ability to lend. See, this view is the view where banks are kind of intermediaries, where they don't really create money supply. And it's also the view where banks are constrained. And I don't think they are. This would imply, again, that the more bank reserves a bank has, the more it can lend. And even if this is true, let's just assume this is true for a second, that this increases their balance sheet capacity. Okay, but they still have to lend. It does, like it, let's As an example, let's say that you get a check for $1 million. This increases your balance sheet capacity to lend, but it doesn't mean that you're going to lend. It doesn't mean that there's parties out there that are worthy to lend money to at an acceptable interest rate based on the risk and reward. It just assumes this. And it also assumes the economic environment is going to be one in which the additional lending is going to more than offset the additional loans being paid off, therefore net increase in dollars. So at the very best, this is an argument that needs far more nuance, because you can't just say that because the Fed is doing quantitative tightening, this somehow means that they're pulling liquidity out of the system, or vice versa. They're doing quantitative easing, that they're somehow injecting liquidity directly into the system. Now, there may be indirect paths that this may happen, but where people get confused is they assume that this is a direct relationship, a direct injection of liquidity into the system, because now all of a sudden the banks have all these bank reserves that they didn't have before. As if somehow, let's just assume the Fed is just buying, let's assume that the primary dealers aren't involved and the Fed is just buying directly from the banks, right? And it is true that, you know, JP Morgan, the Goldman Sachs, they can have a primary dealer within the banking system itself. But let's just assume for a moment that the Fed is just basically swapping bank reserves for treasuries that are on the balance sheets of JP Morgan, right? That assumes that JP Morgan, that those treasuries weren't liquid. Think about this for a moment. I mean, this is where it gets absurd. I can't believe people haven't really, and I'm not saying this author hasn't thought about this, but I would say most of the talking heads in financial media, it's bizarre to me that they haven't just kind of thought this one through a little bit. So you're JP Morgan and you're like, shoot, man, I really want to do more loans, but darn it, I can't, because I don't have the balance sheet capacity, because instead of having bank reserves, which would be awesome right now, whew, that would be amazing if I just had more bank reserves, instead I'm stuck with these stupid darn treasuries. Like, you can't sell the treasuries. Like, huh? So you get my point, is that even if quantitative easing expanded the balance sheet capacity of these banks, they didn't need the balance sheet capacity to begin with, because they could have created it themselves. assuming that the Fed is buying directly from the banks. Now, it is true. Maybe they're buying from the average Joe, the average Jane, the retail investor. Who knows where the primary dealers are getting their treasuries from that they're selling to the Fed and just kind of flipping them and pocketing a spread or whatever. But you get my point. It's not as simple as the Fed is withdrawing liquidity or injecting liquidity. So the dollar could be rallying for a number of reasons. Agreed. Absolutely. You might find it counterintuitive that the dollar is rallying when everyone seems to be saying the economic recession in the United States is imminent, if not already in one. I don't know who would find that counterintuitive. If you said, George, the U.S. is going into a recession, or economic activity is slowing down, we're going into a global recession where there's a lot more counterparty risk, would you expect the dollar to go up or down? I would say up, but again, I'm merely an amateur. Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading, Jason Hartman, real estate, and Brent Johnson with macroeconomics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out of control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow rebel capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level. However, inflation rates are high and the Federal Reserve has become more aggressive than other central banks in tightening monetary policy to combat inflation. Yep, that has made interest rates in the U.S. higher, more attractive anywhere else in the world, developed world, luring money to the dollar. Right, and that's part of the dollar milkshake theory. this is why I'm just wondering if maybe this gentleman would have a different view if he actually spoke with Brent. But maybe they have. I don't know. Again, so maybe dollar strength is simply a function of interest rate differentials. Right. That's part of the. That's one of the main arguments of the dollar milkshake theory. Whatever the reasons, Johnson and his milkshake theory adherents are pretty happy these days. Why? Because the dollar's up. You guys know that. At this point, what would cause the dollar rally to end and for the currencies to weaken? First, the Fed would have to suddenly begin. So you'd have to have the interest rate differential there. Would have to just go in reverse. So instead of the Fed raising rates more aggressively, let's say the Fed starts to lower rates while all of these other central banks start to increase their interest rates. And, you know, this is something that actually Brent and I discussed at Rebel Capitalist Live. And we talked about this with actually Joseph Wang and Jeff Snyder as well. We tried to think through, and I think Brent and I did this the last time I interviewed him on this channel, where we tried to think through what would cause the dollar to actually go down. And this was one of those things. But I don't know that it's a permanent downward trend, because this would imply that, you know, the United States is in a recession. There's fewer dollars leaving. Our trade deficit may be decreasing. And it would also imply that the global monetary or the global economy is in recession as well. And this is one thing I think the author misses here, is that it's not just about, you know, dollar denominated debt and the amount of dollars available. It's the velocity of those dollars outside of the United States due to economic activity, right? So it's not, let's just assume for a moment the Fed was pulling liquidity out of the system and injecting liquidity directly into the system. And there was this one-to-one relationship where the Fed could just, you know, it was like a thermostat on your wall. The Fed wanted, you know, 71 degrees in liquidity. Well, they could just do that. And bam, you get your 71 degrees of liquidity. Oh, a little too warm. Okay, let's notch it down to 70 degrees. Oh, that's much better right there. So assuming that the Fed has that type of power, even then, there are other dynamics at play. And one of the main dynamics, like I just said, is global economic activity. If you have this much debt and the economic activity goes down, the velocity of those dollars circulating goes down, because you're going to have more debt than you're going to have dollars, because the dollars were created with debt. And then you've got the principal plus the interest payments. So it is very possible, like I explained on my last whiteboard, to have $20 of debt and service the debt, pay it back with only $10. But most people think that it's just, you know, it's this massive house of cards that because there is more debt than dollars, then it's just bound to implode. That isn't necessarily true. But those dollars have to be circulating. We have to have more economic activity. And if we have less economic activity, then it is true. You're not going to have the dollars just to satisfy the debt. And that's where you're going to have to sell your local currency. And that's going to exacerbate the problem. So main takeaway there, my main thought is let's just assume that the Fed was this monetary wizard that had that type of control over liquidity. Still, we've got to factor in the economic activity globally, not just what the Fed's doing with their balance sheet. And now here is where I completely agree with the author, 100%. I analyze markets from a framework of sentiment, and I have been observing bullish sentiment on dollar steadily increasing. Google phrase dollar milkshake theory pops up, I'm sure. Yeah. So basically the Google searches for dollar milkshake theory are at all time highs. Yeah. Listen, it's definitely overbought for sure. You know, so is Bitcoin at 60,000. And that doesn't mean that long term. I mean, let's think about this here. So is copper. So was uranium a couple months ago. Yeah, it's overbought. Would I buy it now? No. Yes, it's on the cover of The Economist, and that's a bad sign. Sure, but it doesn't mean that commodities aren't in a 10 or 15 year super cycle just because they're overbought now. And I don't know that Brent's argument, maybe it is, but I don't know that it's the dollar is going up in a straight line and there aren't going to be any pullbacks. So here will history repeat, because he points out that the dollar got up to a little over 100 or so. I believe it was 2016, 17-ish, and then came right back down to call it 90 or 89. And okay, but let's go back to the early 1980s. where, let's see if we got that one. I got velocity. I'm sure I've got it. Here's the DXY. So here's 1984, where the dollar got up to 151. And you'll notice in 1980, the dollar was at, call it 85. So we go from 85 to 150 within a matter of, let's say, 4 years. But look at this chart. Does the dollar go up in a straight line? No, nothing ever does. Look at any chart of any asset. Look at a chart of inflation. Nothing goes up or down in a straight line. Never, 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 never. So sure, there's volatility, but I think what Brent's talking about here, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he's talking about a long-term trend. And I think there's arguments against long-term trend. But to just say that it's overbought now, therefore the long-term trend is null and void, I don't think that's a substantial argument. And just in the argument that, well, it could be a variety of things, not just the dollar milkshake theory, such as interest rate differentials. Well, that's part of it. That's part of the dollar milkshake theory. So, all right, let's skip back to, where's the article here? Oh, here it is. Being long the dollar is the oddest trade to form a cult around. Okay. Johnson and his adherents have a provocative worldview, one in which the strong dollar is a wrecking ball that destroys other currencies and related assets. This is the macro doom that I've written about. The dollar will become progressively stronger, and the result will be a crash in stocks and other risky assets. No, it's, again, the dollar milkshake theory is actually bullish. For U.S. stocks. Now, maybe other stocks and, you know, and other markets, emerging markets maybe, but as far as the U.S., it actually suggests that dollars will be coming into the United States and potentially flowing into the stock market. A stronger dollar view is essentially a pessimistic view. I have a hard time with that term, pessimistic, because it implies that you just have this negative view of the world instead of just pointing out realities. Like I get accused of that all the time, right? Oh, doom and gloom, doom and gloom. Oh, George, you're selling fear, blah, 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 blah. Look, I've got to write a title, so it's going to get a click. Sure, absolutely, absolutely. But you've got to back up. If you just wrote all these clickbait titles, I wouldn't have 400,000 subscribers, or call it 470 if you include this channel, right? The reason people watch the whiteboard videos is because, yes, the title's enticing, but there's a lot of substance in there that backs up the title. And that's why if you look at the like ratio, you know, it's like 99% on a video that gets 150,000 views, right? So it's not that these video, in my opinion, at least, it's not that these videos are just, oh, I'm just, you know, it's not fear porn or doom porn or whatever. Look at the fundamental analysis of what I am saying. Look at the reality. Just try to eliminate emotion from the equation and look at what I am saying from a fundamental standpoint. And then let me hear your argument as to why I'm wrong. Let me hear your argument as to why the U.S. economy is strong right now, because I think it's weak. Now, is that me being pessimistic and negative? No, I'm just, it's just reality, man. Look at the, look, and it's not just me. Look at the bond market. Is the 10-year treasury trying to sell doom and gloom? Is the 10-year treasury pessimistic? No, it doesn't have an emotion. The market in aggregate total doesn't have emotions. Well, I guess it does. I guess it does, doesn't it? But I don't think that the 10-year treasury implies what most would consider pessimism. It implies a worldview where the reality and the highest probability is that we go into a recession. And so I think the word pessimism or pessimistic would imply that you are negative regardless of the probabilities, right? So if there was a meteor coming toward Earth and it was 5 minutes away and there was a 100% probability that it hit the Earth, and you said, oh my gosh, there's a meteor coming that's going to wipe out half the planet, would you be pessimistic, or would you just be stating factual truth? I think that's the difference there. But anyway, I digress. Let's get back to the article. And then he goes on to say the theory may be correct. But like all trades, it can easily fall out of favor for a period of weeks, months, years. That is what inevitably happens when sentiment gets extremely hot, and it may be happening now. Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more with the conclusion and how he wraps this up there with that last sentence. The other stuff, if I want to poke some holes in it, I can poke some holes in it. I think, I don't know. Who knows why he's writing it? Maybe he's writing this just to kind of, maybe he's seeing that the dollar milkshake is getting a lot of clicks on Google, and he's thinking to himself, okay, well, maybe I could get a lot of clicks if I write something, that's as a contrary narrative or something that's a little bit dramatic, on why this is a cult. And then maybe I'll get a lot of those clicks. Maybe there's some sort of strategy there. Maybe the guy just thinks Brent is overly simplistic, in which I would strongly suggest just have a conversation with Brent and bring up your, let's say, objections and hear what he has to say. Because I think if you actually talk to Brent, you'll see that his theory is by no means simplistic, and it's incredibly nuanced, and it actually includes a lot of the arguments that this gentleman was making in his article. So there you go. Little macro drama. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you in the next video.